Hello and welcome to Book Echoes, the podcast on making great books while making creative lives that work. I'm your host, author, editor, and writing coach, Connie B. Dowell. So today I am coming to you guys from a nice warm, a little too warm for me, day in June. I miss the days when I could get up a little bit later and still get some jogging and walking time in before it felt too warm. But alas, spring is gone. Summer is definitely here. And I am feeling a little bit jealous of all of you listeners who are in the summer hemisphere where things are starting to cool off. And you're definitely in fall approaching winter territory, which is kind of my favorite time of year. But I just have to wait 6 months for it to come back, right? Yeah. But one good thing about it being summer is that I have a little bit extra time to work on my writing and my editing and coaching. So while I have actually scheduled the first half of this month pretty good for myself, I do have a few openings later in the month and during the month of July. So if you are looking for an editor, or if you are interested in book coaching and need some help with writer's block, with productivity, working out plot or character issues, then those are all things that, whether in a one-off strategy session or through regular scheduled meetings and feedback over the course of a few months, coaching can help with. So if you are interested in that, in editing or coaching, head on over to bookechoes.com/services and let's see if I can hook you up with something good. So today I talked to author Cassandra Morgan about a topic that I have foreshadowed for a week or two of crossing genres. We talked about writing in two different genres, starting your career in one genre and moving to another, as well as books that straddle two or more genres and how to approach them from a packaging and marketing perspective. And it's a really interesting discussion. We really kind of got down into the nitty-gritty of both of those related topics. And I think you guys are really going to enjoy it. So let's move on straight into the interview with Cassandra. So today on the podcast, I'm talking with author Cassandra Morgan, who also writes mysteries as C.P. Morgan. And we've got some really exciting genre stuff to talk about with you guys today. So welcome to the podcast, Cassandra.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited. This is a topic that I haven't had a chance to talk about in depth very much, so I'm kind of excited.
All right. Well, I am excited to dive into this topic with you. But before we get started, would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your books?
Sure. So I actually come from a family of writers and authors and English majors. So I've been writing since I think before I even knew my alphabet, just making up stories and banging out gobbledygook on my uncle's typewriter. But I've been actively pursuing an author career since around 2011. I primarily write, or at least I started to write, fantasy. So I have a young adult fantasy series called The Kingdoms of Cartile, and that is written under my Cassandra Morgan name. And then a few years ago, I kind of branched out a little bit into more of the mystery side of things, and that's under C.P. Morgan. You can find any of my books at authorcassandramorgan.com or authorcpmorgan.com, whichever one you're interested in. And you can get to the other side of things from that website too, if you want to check them both out.
All right, absolutely. So as we hinted at, but maybe haven't directly said, so today we're talking about
about crossing genres, about writers who write more than one genre and maybe books that fit into more than one genre. So as someone who has moved from one genre to another, what are some of the challenges in switching genres, maybe in preparation and marketing and other kinds of things?
So everything really comes back to audience. You'll probably hear me talk about audience a lot during this. And I had, with my two genres, so I have the young adult fantasy, and then I have a mystery series. And we'll get into a little bit more about what kind of mystery it is a little bit later. So that's the mystery is a mystery right now. but I had two completely different audiences for that. Obviously, I had my young adults, so anyone 14 all the way up to usually early 30s, those are the people that I find tend to like the young adult genre. In my mystery series, my protagonist is in her mid-60s. So I was specifically targeting women who were 40 plus years old for that genre. So totally different audiences for that. I basically had to start from the ground up in a way. So everybody that I had established as a fan or a follower or a reader for my fantasy series, I could not guarantee that they would cross over to the other side. Some of them did just because of the nature of the mystery series, but a lot of them did not. So everything that I did to start with my young adult series, I had to do for the mystery series. I had to start making connections early. I had to start an email list. I had to do a little bit of a lead magnet kind of thing. I had to start networking and getting into other people's newsletters and making appearances for interviews on people's websites and podcasts and, you know, different things like that, and just really working from the ground up. And then when I launched my first book, I had all these connections kind of in place. So people were already kind of aware of me. They'd already sort of heard from me, from this author that they already follow, or from this Facebook group that they've already been part of. And I could just use those networks and those platforms and those little tentacles, if you will, those touch tentacles, if you will, to kind of go out and reach this completely different audience that I had to start from the ground up with.
Yeah, absolutely. So that in itself is a pretty big challenge. You are sort of, you're sort of, you're experienced, but you're sort of starting over. And email list is something I definitely wanted to touch on with you on this topic. So you started a completely separate list, not a segmented list.
Correct. Yeah. Just because my two audiences were so different, people that were looking for mystery books, that were looking for that kind of amateur sleuth, that were looking for that sort of animal mystery sort of thing, you know, they're not necessarily going to want to read about a chosen one, read about elves, dwarves, magic, and a battle for the throne, and have, you know, characters named things like Ava Ruani, or, you know, worry about Freyja from the Cobalt District, or, you know, different things like that. That's not their jam. So, yeah, I had a lot of conversations with a lot of people about which way I should go. And ultimately that was the decision I decided to make. And I'm glad that I did, because even just talking to people in person when I do events, depending on the event, I do have both series available for people, but it's very rare to find somebody that is interested in both of those series. So, I mean, it does happen, don't get me wrong. But yeah, the decision to kind of separate myself, again, like with the email list, like you were talking about, I didn't want those people to be delivered my, you know, May fantasy finds of the month kind of thing. If they're a mystery reader, they're not going to care about that. you know, but then I also didn't want to send my young adult fantasy people deals on books that had protagonists that were in their 40s, 50s, and 60s, when these are people who are probably on average in their mid-20s. They're generally not going to be interested in those kind of things. So yeah, I did a completely separate email list for that. Sometimes I'll do a cross where the same kind of life update message sort of thing goes into both. You know, I don't write two different versions of that. That would be silly. And I do let either side know what's going on with those different projects so that if they are interested, they can go check it out. I don't keep it a secret from anybody. But I think with my genres, I can do that. It's not like I'm writing something inappropriate to somebody who's, you know, 15, 16 years old that would be reading my young adult books. They don't need to know about that other series if that was the kind of thing that I was writing. But I can kind of cross like that a little bit.
Yeah, that's a good point. That things can be kept separate, but don't necessarily have to be secret unless, you know, say you are writing like children's books and also erotica. That probably right, should exactly. be secret.
Exactly. Exactly. And I know an author that writes very steamy adult novels. And then she also has a young adult and she uses completely different names for those. The streams do not cross, you know, mm-hmm. none of that stuff. And that is entirely understandable. Luckily with my books, I don't have to worry about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So luckily, just to acknowledge for listeners, if my kid is like crying on the background there, her dad has her, she's all right. She's just mad that I'm in here doing this. But oh well, she'll be okay. I'm glad you mentioned a minute ago about maybe when you choose a live event to choose a genre to focus on. We have an episode coming out just a few weeks before this one about live events, and that is a consideration in choosing which event and what series to promote.
Mm-hmm. So when I've done events like Comic-Con, I get a wide variety of people that are there. And you do find at Comic-Con, you're going to get more fantasy and sci-fi books there. So having my mystery books available gives people options for presents. I get probably 50% of my sales from my mystery books are presents that people buy for their aunt or their grandmother or their mom or somebody like that, which is fantastic. And it kind of gives them an option to do that. Be like, well, I was thinking about you while I was at this con, but you don't really like Star Trek. And, you know, I couldn't go and get you the dragon scale necklace because that's not the thing that you like. But I found this mystery book and I know that you like to read mysteries. So it's just kind of a nice option to have. So I do have both. At my bigger venues, but if I'm doing something like a while ago I did a charity event for an animal shelter because my books feature cats and cat mythology from around the world. So I had my other fantasy books with me underneath the table. I had a couple copies of each just in case somebody asked. I wanted to have them available, but I didn't carry like a whole box because in case, you know, all of you new authors out there don't know, dead trees are really heavy. So if you can condense down your stock, do that. So for something like that, because it was very animal related and most of the people that are coming out to the charity event are generally a little bit older, that was my target audience. So I primarily featured my mystery book for something like that.
Yeah, but that seems to mirror what you're talking about with your email list marketing. But here's this thing that I'm focusing on. And also I've got this other stuff just in case you're interested.
Right. Yeah. But I don't push it unless somebody mm-hmm. asks, you know, because with the charity event, they'll sometimes say like, hey, an author, Cassandra Morgan is going to be here, blah, 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 kind of thing. So they might do a little shout out and then people will go, oh, who's this Cassandra Morgan person, you know, and they'll go and look me up. Maybe they heard of my fantasy books in that way. Maybe it's a mom or a grandma, and they're kind of like dragging the teenager along with them. And after a while, when you've done some of these events, you can start to read people. So you can see that, like, I can tell this person likes books, but they don't like these books. And so I'll ask them, what kind of books do you like to read? You know, if they're, you know, that 16, 17, and they've been drugged to the event. And they go, oh, well, I like to read fantasy books. I've got a fantasy book. Would you like to see it? You know, so I don't push it unless I feel it or unless they ask about it. So you just kind of tepid the waters a little bit there. But I'd like to make it available just in case.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. You know, you never know when you might make a sale.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So we talked a little bit about kind of the challenges reestablishing yourself in that new market, and that, you know, you had some but not lots of crossover. What about market research in advance of writing the book?
So I think for my fantasy series, it was certainly a lot easier because that's what I primarily grew up reading. But for my mystery books, I wasn't really a mystery reader. I didn't like it, surprisingly. And maybe that's one reason why my mystery books are a little bit different from the typical mystery book. But I did have to read a lot, and I kind of lurked in a lot of these cozy mystery groups and like 20 books to 50K, if any of your listeners had heard of them. They actually have a mystery books kind of shoot off sort of thing. So I lurked a lot, I paid attention a lot, and I just stalked, I guess you could say, in a way of what are my peers doing and what is it that I want to emulate? What do I think is something that I could recreate? What is something that I think could possibly work? And then ask questions, you know, so throughout the whole process of me outlining and writing things, and even before that, it's asking questions. There's no such thing as a stupid question. And I think that if anybody makes you feel bad about it, that's shame on them, not shame on you.
Absolutely. There is no such thing as a stupid question. It's far more stupid not to ask your question and then not know. So there's definitely some genre research in place, especially if it's not a genre that you're familiar with when you get started. You've chosen to do two separate pen names. Mm-hmm. And that is a decision point for a lot of writers, especially if you've got genres that aren't necessarily like a no-touch zone, like, you know, say steamy mystery and children's, where you would be pretty inclined to have a pen name. But some people who just write different genres that aren't necessarily secret from each other still have to make a judgment call on that. So what influenced your decision to have two separate pen names as opposed to just two separate email lists?
Yeah, so my decision had to do with my audience. Like, again, I said I was probably going to bring that up a lot. If I were going from fantasy to something like sci-fi, I do have a sci-fi duology that I will eventually write someday. And that I'm going to write under my Cassandra Morgan name, but just because I didn't feel like there was going to be enough of a cross between the two audiences, that's why I chose the completely different pen name, because the marketing is going to be different, because there's such a big age gap with my audience. Even my author voice in the books is different compared to how I write my fantasy books. So even the way that it sounds, the way that I speak to these two different audiences is completely different from you know, one book to the other, or one series to the other, I should say. So yeah, it really came back to my audience. And I had a lot of people say, you know, because I'm not doing something like erotica where you wouldn't want that crossover, that I could just use my Cassandra Morgan name, and it, I'm making more work for myself by doing the separate pen name. And yeah, I guess there is more work involved in that, but when I do any kind of marketing campaigns, when I post something, I don't have to worry about, oh, this is an article that I found about the Icelandic Yule cap. My mystery writers are going to potentially love something like this. My fantasy writers, I'm not so sure. Or if I post something about Princess Anastasia, again, my mystery lovers are potentially going to love something like that because of the nature of my books. But my fantasy writers, I don't know. And I don't want to have all of these posts showing up in their social media. I don't want to have all of these articles and things coming up in my newsletters where they're going, I'm not interested in the stuff that this person is posting anymore. I'm going to unfollow them, and I'm not going to pay attention to them, and I'm not going to engage in those kind of things. And those are really important factors to consider. So for me, I guess technically it's twice as much work, but I don't have to worry about losing readership. I don't have to worry about losing followers at the same time.
That is a good point, especially, you know, if you have a very strong social media following and social media presence, that those will be, it's, you know, something you'd want to separate out on different pages. And it's just to present another option. It's a problem I ran into because I write both my mysteries and my nonfiction for writers under the same name. That I eventually had to split my Facebook presence to have the page that's just Connie B. Dowell, mystery author, and a page that's Connie B. Dowell of Book Echoes Media. So basically all my nonfiction stuff and this podcast has its own tied in points because I use that same name, and I don't want to give articles about writing to mystery readers. But if you're a nonfiction writer and you have another kind of presence, like a podcast or a blog with some other name that's not yours, so that's a way you can transition when you realize you do need a split if you're writing both fiction and nonfiction under the same name.
Yeah, I do something similar on my website. So I don't necessarily do it on the CP Morgan website, but on my Cassandra Morgan website, authorcassandramorgan.com. If you just go to that, the first page that you'll see, the left-hand side says for readers, and the right-hand side says for writers. And then if you click on either one, that then actually takes you to two different websites that I do WordPress on the back end. So authorcassandramorgan.com/readers has a completely different interface on the back end with WordPress that I log into to make changes to. And authorcassandramorgan.com/writers is, again, completely different, but I don't post blog posts about writing stuff and writing topics and you know, things like that. Resources that I have on my reader side, because there's a lot of people that are just readers and they don't care about that writing mm-hmm. stuff. Generally, writers are also readers at the same time, mm-hmm. so they can go ahead and pick and choose which one they want for that, you know, for that particular moment. But yeah, I do the same thing where I keep things separated.
Yeah. So that is a good setup to maybe that folks could go to your website and look at how that is. So you're using a multi-site. I know they don't call it multi-site anymore, but I'm old in WordPress terms. So
I will be honest that maybe I'm not using the right terms either, because my husband works in IT, and so he's kind of the one that sets it up. I just went to him and I said, this is what I want to have happen. This is what I want to do. And he goes, okay, this is the way we're going to set it up. So yeah, when I, if I want to make any changes to what I consider to be my homepage, authorcassandramorgan.com, that has a different WordPress login than authorcassandramorgan.com/readers, and that's different from authorcassandramorgan.com/writers. And again, I understand that for some people, that is way too much work. And I completely respect that because sometimes it's a pain in the butt to me too. But I very much like my stuff organized and compartmentalized. And that is just how I live my life and how my brain works. So that's why that works for me.
Yeah. And so for those who are interested in doing this and feel comfortable enough with WordPress to do it, because it can be a pain in the backside to set up. I'll put links in the show notes. I will use the modern term. They called it multi-site for all these years, and now I can't remember what they're calling it today. But it's basically like WordPress where you, is it network? Because it is a network of sites that you have. You have one WordPress installation with several sub WordPress installations, which are actually separate websites with separate, they can have separate themes. Yeah. You know. Okay. Anyway, it was a pain in the, you know what, when I set my, but I will put some links in there. So people who want to figure that out can figure it out. There are also lots of other options if you are less tech inclined to get something similar, so you don't have to go into the weeds of WordPress. This just not to scare anyone away who wants yes. to segment their website. Yes.
There's definitely a lot of other options out there. I just happen to be very lucky in that my husband works in IT. He owns his own IT company. So I get a lot of tech support for free. And I understand that not a lot of people have that pleasure. So
Yeah. So there are a lot of options nowadays from sites like Wix and Squarespace that have lots of drag and drop options.
Yeah.
For folks that find WordPress a little too clunky, which I guess I've been on the internet so long that I'm like, WordPress is clunky? I was thinking like, oh, this is so nice. I don't have to code in my hand, but
yeah, I remember those days.
Yeah. So, but that now it's even more streamlined. You don't even have to do WordPress. But to get a little bit back on our topic. So that is, you know, ways you can segment things out, by pen name or not by pen name. Those are some options. So do you recommend, crossing genres to an author who might be considering doing that?
I think that it really depends on the person. I have tons of different stories in my mind. I have like a psychological thriller that I want to write. I have a sci-fi duology, which is kind of like a space opera romance kind of thing that I want to write. I've got children's books ideas that I wanted to do. So I think eventually I'm going to have to come to a decision about someday about how I want those things to sort of coalesce. I'm not at that point right now, but if you're somebody that is thinking very, very long term, that is something to consider too. If you only want to cross maybe into one different thing, like if you do fantasy and I really like mystery and that's it and that's all of where you're going to stay, then maybe that's an okay decision for you to do. But if you're somebody that wants to be known as writing all of the things, then maybe you choose to just do one name. Again, unless there's maybe some inappropriate stuff there, that's something that I would probably vote against. I think most people would, but really it's completely dependent on the person. There's pros and cons on every side of it. So I don't want to say that, well, this is the way that I did it, and so this is the way that everybody should do it. That's certainly not the case. As anybody will find in writing, there are 16 paths to the same destination. And none of them are wrong, because it all depends on whether you're a fish and you're going to take the water route, or whether you're a monkey and you're going to swing through the trees and take that route. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, so lots of options to consider. I think a lot of us are in the position of you know, having a million ideas, and it is hard to narrow it down. but options for all of us. So let's talk a little bit about a different sort of crossing genre situation. Let's talk about books that straddle more than one genre.
Yeah. So my mystery books absolutely do this. To this day, I am still struggling to figure out what genre these books really belong in. I chose cozy mystery to start with, and sometimes I'll say magical cozy mystery because it does have like a magic element to it. But I think if you ask 20 different people to define what is cozy mystery, what is paranormal mystery, what is paranormal cozy mystery, you know, you're going to get 20 different answers. I think when you make the decision though to kind of cross genres, that needs to be a very conscious decision, because that is going to affect your marketing, that is going to affect your audience. I've had good reviews on Amazon for my books, but I've had a couple of people will take one star off because they're, so instead of getting 5 stars, I'm only getting 4 stars because they're like, this was a great book, I loved it, blah, 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 but I would not call this a cozy mystery. And then I've had other people read it and they're like, this is a great cozy mystery, blah, 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 blah. So you really need to again, know your audience and your marketing, which is going to include your blurbs. It's going to include your cover. It's going to include any kind of teasers you release. It's going to include what kind of lead magnet you give out. It's going to include any kind of graphics or articles or anything like that that you post in social media. All of that needs to speak to the audience that you are trying to attract. Even with crossing genres, just because you're crossing two different genres doesn't mean that you can double up on your readership. So I kind of have this magical cozy mystery series, which is like one part Warehouse 13, one part amateur spy with cats sort of thing. And that doesn't mean that I'm going to get, well, everybody that loved Warehouse 13 is going to want to read these books. And everybody who loves reading mysteries about cats are going to want to read this book. And so now I have two different audiences that I can dip into. You know, it's not that at all. If anything, it narrows down the number of people that are going to be interested in something like that. Because there are some people, they do not want fantasy in their mystery. They don't think that it has a place for it. That's fine. Those are not my readers, and that is totally okay. There's other people that are like, I don't want all this mystery stuff and amateur sleuthing and spies and secret organizations in my fantasy. What is this? This is ridiculous. You know, those are not my readers either, and that's okay. So when you're making the decision to cross genres like that, it needs to be a very conscious decision, because you're going to have to market in a very specific way, because instead of it allowing you to tap into two different audience markets, instead it really narrows your playing field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very specific readership who like these. There are a number of, and paranormal, especially paranormal cozy, is kind of having a moment right now, but mm-hmm. But it is a specific readership. It's not all cozy mystery readers, and it's not you know, all fantasy readers. I know there are some other interesting like little genre combos that, like, I think of like specialty paint options. Like it's green and it's blue and it's teal, and not everyone wants teal. Right. Some people will just want blue, and some people want green, and some people who want green also like teal. There you
exactly,
go.
Exactly.
Yeah. We talked a little bit about the marketing decisions that you have to make and knowing that market. How does that make, especially for indie authors who are choosing their own covers or their own cover designers, how does that make that choice more, let's just call it interesting?
Yeah, so I would say that you want to work with a designer that is familiar with the genre. I will say that the decision that I made with my covers was not necessarily to go with what was popular. I wanted my covers to be completely different. And I have had people say, oh, your covers are what's killing you. Your covers are not, you know, doing you any good in any of your marketing. But then when I have people that are my audience see those covers, they're like, I want to read that book. So it's important to work with a designer that understands that genre. And they understand what audience you're going after. It's important to communicate those things to your designer as well. I'm a little bit different. Again, I know that should be like the title of this podcast is I'm a little bit different. I know a lot of authors will go to their designer and they'll sit there and say, well, I want a girl on the cover that she's got long dark hair and there needs to be a piece that's like falling into her face. And then she has to have in her left hand, she needs to be having a blue orb. And on her right shoulder, she's going to have a dragon and the dragon needs to be pink. And they start throwing like all these things at the designers. I like to tell my designer a little bit about the story. And say, go have fun. And I tell you, the best covers that I have ever had have come out of telling my designers, go have fun. Because they also know that when they get back to me, there's not quite as much of that fear of like, oh my gosh, I hope that they like it. They truly can come back and say, I threw out some of these designs, which one do you like? Or, hey, I came up with this, what do you think? And if I don't like it, that's not to say that they're not going to be like, oh man, now I feel really bad because they completely missed the mark. But maybe they don't feel quite as bad. But frankly, anytime that I've done that with any of my designers for anything, even some of my lead magnets, I have little, you know, covers that were done, graphics for the books. Anytime that I have given complete rein over to my designers, it's just been like tiny little tweaks on things. And I think that makes a difference, but it's important to make sure that your designer knows that genre. Because if you have a designer that does all fantasy and that's fantasy is their jam, and then they try to do a psychological thriller, that might or might not turn out very good. And are you willing to take that risk?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's the designer knowledge of the genre is important. But when you get a designer with really great skill and really great knowledge of the genre, they're going to make better choices than you as to what goes on the cover.
Absolutely. I feel like I've gotten to the point in like some of these groups where people are like, hey, what do you think of this? I know enough to be dangerous where I say, oh, your lighting is off. Do you see how that shadow is cast like this for this element, but it's cast like that over here? Your light and your shadows, they're off. Or that's not the right font for that genre. Now, don't ask me how to fix it because I don't know how to fix it. But I can tell you when something's good and when something is not. So I know enough to be dangerous, but because I don't know enough how to do it myself, I don't try.
Yeah, I hear you on that. So far we've talked about genre straddling books, but we've focused on established really niche subgenres like paranormal mystery, which it straddles fantasy, it straddles mystery, but it's so far, you know, it's a genre that I think has its own little subcategory on Amazon. There are some other genre straddling categories like fantasy romance comes to mind that has its own little niche audience on Amazon. What about people writing books that maybe have elements of one genre, but they need to make a choice on how they're going to market that book.
I would say figure out what your primary genre is, and then write the book mainly to those specifications with the other stuff kind of sprinkled in. And then again, just go and see what it is that your peers are doing. Get feedback in these groups from more experienced people. There's not necessarily a one recipe fits all kind of thing, because the way that historical romance people, the way that they market is totally different from the way that sci-fi people market. But Outlander is like super popular, right? And that's historical romance mixed with time travel. You know, so the way that she marketed her books was primarily focusing on the historical romance aspect, but she still needed to tie in that time travel element as well. And what worked for her is not necessarily going to work for somebody that is writing primarily mystery with a little bit of magic sprinkled in on the side. Those two different types of marketing are going to be very different. So the best suggestion that I have is talk to your peers, talk to people who are more experienced, and it's kind of scary, but you do sort of just have to make a decision. Your book is your baby, and somebody can tell you how to parent all day long, and you're going to get, you ask 20 different people, you're going to get 20 different answers. That's what I said earlier, but ultimately you are the parent. You are the one that needs to make the decision for better or for worse what to do. And that's kind of how it is with your book baby. You know, for better or for worse, you're the one that's the parent, and you have to decide what routes you're going to take. You can take in as much information as you can, but learning everything in the world is not going to help you. Action is what is going to help you. And if you ask any indie author, if you ask any traditionally published author, any author, whether or not they ever made any mistakes, and somebody says, oh, no, I never made any mistakes, they are lying to your face. So don't be afraid to make mistakes either. Don't be afraid to say, well, these covers really aren't working. I might have to invest in a year or two into getting some better covers, because now I know more. I know more now than what I did then. And I can make better decisions. Just like a parent can say, well, this is the way that I handled this situation in the past. I know better now, so I'm not going to make that same decision for my second child as I did for my first child.
Yeah, that's a good point. At some point, you do have to take action and just learn from mistakes along the way. For indie authors, you have the freedom that if you market something in one direction and it doesn't seem to take off, you can try to tweak. Yeah, you can shift and change your positioning, and maybe you'll have more success as you learn more. But you can also, you know, it didn't work for your first book. Maybe you'll do something different for your second. There are some books that just don't sell indie, or if you're pursuing traditional, or some books that just aren't going to find a home, write another book.
Exactly.
So it's just important not to let fear paralyze you, which is tough, because genre straddling is risky, but it's also where we get some really interesting, innovative ideas.
Absolutely.
I'm
reading a book right now, which is it's basically dinosaurs in space is what it is. Somebody took this idea that a spaceship crashed on another planet, and there's these creatures there that are kind of like dinosaurs. And so you have these people that are trying to live a slightly primitive life, but they have some technology from the ship that crashed, and there's dinosaurs running around trying to eat them. It is the coolest book. So it kind of mixes that whole, like, that prehistoric, historical kind of genre thing, and that survival sort of genre with sci-fi and ray guns, and it is gloriously epic, and I adore it. And I'm halfway through this book in just the first one, and I think she's got three in the series, and I'm so excited to finish them.
Yeah, and I mean, to my knowledge, that is not an established subgenre. Someone had to take a risk. Or you mentioned Outlander. Now there's a whole bunch of time travel romance, and that's a big thing because Outlander took that risk and got big. Yeah. So I think this has been a really great chat about different aspects of crossing genres and mixing genres. Do you have any parting thoughts or something that maybe we should have touched on that we haven't?
The only thing that I would say is do your research. Do your research, but don't get stuck in a research loop. Don't be afraid to take chances, make mistakes, and get messy, in the words of Mrs. Frizzle.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, thanks again for coming on, Cassandra. Would you mind reminding our listeners before you go where we can find you and your books online?
Absolutely. So right now, my Magical Mystery series is available on Kindle and on Amazon. You can visit my website at www.authorcpmorgan.com. If you're more interested in my fantasy books, those are wide. There's two currently published in the series. You can learn more about those at www.authorcassandramorgan.com. And you can also find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram under Cassandra Morgan or Author Cassandra Morgan. On Instagram, I am Morgan_Cassandra. So just check any of those out and you'll find me.
All right, great. Thanks. It has been wonderful talking with you this evening.
Thank you so much.
Thanks again for listening today. I hope that you have enjoyed this discussion of genre crossing and genre straddling. And if you would like to share some thoughts, I would love to hear from you in a comment on the show notes at bookechoes.com/show. That's where you can find all the show notes to all the episodes. If you are listening to this one the week it comes out, it will be right up at the top. And I'd also love to hear from you if you want to email me, connie@bookechoes.com, or leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you happen to be listening to this podcast. Until next time, have a wonderful week and happy writing!